What is going on, everybody? My name is Larry Francis, but you know me better on Instagram as A Wrestling Historian, and today on To Be Determined, I have my guest with me, the legendary Mr. Wrestling for Sale. How you doing?
I'm great, Larry. Thank you for having me.
When I first got on Instagram and just checking out various pro wrestling accounts, I saw a random post, a random shirt, and I went to it. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And I checked out the rest of your account. Just all these shirts, all these old vintage shirts, rare shirts, and I couldn't believe the collection had, and I thought to myself, whenever I start a podcast, I would have you on as a guest. So here we are.
I'm a bit of a historian myself. I'm a merch historian.
Yeah, there you go. It's really cool that you do that. You know, I think there's a couple more guys that are in the old t-shirt selling business in wrestling, but yours just, it's like the cream of the crop.
Yeah, at this point there's way more than a few. I'd say about 100 at this point. I mean, that's just the sign of any market that takes up, you know? It doesn't upset me, and, you know, like, price changes and things like that don't really bother me. It's just nice to see that the people who like it are getting their hands on the things that they want.
About 3 years ago, I started my Instagram account, so I can't remember what shirt it was that caught my eye, but it was something, so...
You started 3 years ago. Did you start before me or after me?
I joined Instagram, and believe me, had I known how Instagram worked, if I knew about it more, I would have done it like years ago, like when it first started, but I didn't join until September 2015.
I had the idea for it at the end of 2015. And then I sat on the account for a couple months, like not doing anything. I just had the name intact, and I had the email set up and all that, and then I decided to go forward with it, I think, in like March of 2016.
So for the listeners out there who aren't familiar with your great account, could you give them a little backstory on yourself?
Yeah, so... I'm not even going to say that I'm the biggest wrestling fan in the world, because I'm not. And, in fact, people are getting very aggressive with how much they like wrestling these days, and it's fine. But I will never really reach those heights. I get into it in spurts. I was a big wrestling fan from the time I was about 3 years old, three or four. The first anything I ever watched was WrestleMania 4 in 1988. And then from there, I would, you know, just basically watch it whenever I was on TV, you know, rented countless videos, taped the videos, had a double VCR to tape, and, continued watching until about 92, and I slowly, like, got out of it by the middle of 94. I didn't really care about it, and then Dad was like, you know, just kind of wanted to do something with his son, and took me to Bash the Beach 95. Then I was involved fully into it again, so it was like most wrestling fans do. And at that point, you know, it was an amazing time to get back into it because it's April of 1996, and then right around the corner you have Bash at the Beach 96, and so I kind of hit it at the hot point and ran that till about when I went to college in 2001 and basically stopped watching wrestling until 2011, then stopped again, and then got back into 2016 when I had the account fully going.
Yeah, kind of funny how that works. Either you're consistent or you just come in and out at random times, right?
And, you know, now that we have the WWE Network, I've been able to go back and watch a lot of it, and I feel like I didn't miss much anyways in those periods, so I guess it is what it is.
Do you recall the first shirt you ever bought?
The first shirt I ever... Well, the first one I can remember getting, because I know I had, like, child-size Hogan and Ultimate Warrior stuff, but the first one I remember being in line to buy was the WrestleMania 7 shirt with my dad, because we went to WrestleMania 7 in Los Angeles. And that was actually one of the first items I sold on Wrestling for Sale, because I had his XL, which now fits me. So I was fine getting rid of my medium, or whatever it was. But I think that was the first thing I can remember purchasing.
You said WrestleMania 4 was your first wrestling show that you remember watching?
4, yes. That was the first one I ever saw.
Who was your favorite wrestler growing up?
Hulk Hogan.
Kind of my story, you know, as soon as I saw WrestleMania 3 and he body slam Andre, it was a done deal for me after that.
Yeah, I was very much a Hogan guy. Like, I didn't love the Ultimate Warrior. I was, you know, when I was watching WrestleMania 6, I remember being very nervous. I think it was, like, the first time I ever felt nervous, and I was very upset. But yeah, I loved him. I loved Randy Savage. It wasn't until later in life, you know, that I started liking Ric Flair and Steve Austin. Mainly Hogan and Savage when I was a kid.
What's your favorite Hogan match?
My favorite Hogan match? I mean, I really like just in terms of build-up and how it was executed and all that, I can't think of anything I like more than the main event of WrestleMania 5, the Mega Powers.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. That's probably my favorite classic WWF storyline.
Yeah, I thought that was his best match. I don't know. You know, the thing with him, and a lot of, like, younger people, and, I don't know, people who have short memory kind of bitch about him and say, you know, he's like, oh, he's such a terrible worker, and, like, you know, using the jargon. But, like, when you're a 5 or 6-year-old kid and you see that guy win a match, and you see the, like, posing and the hype and the hysteria and all that, like, that's what you remember. You're not remembering botches. You're not remembering anything. You're just remembering the high points. And I feel like a lot of people forget that.
Well, it's funny, too. You know, I'll hear those same complaints, and then I'll just tell them to go watch any of his matches in Japan. It'll blow their mind when they see him, like, chain wrestling and do moves they never seen him do before.
Right. But yeah, I was definitely a Hulkamaniac, that's for sure.
Now, if I remember correctly in our Instagram conversations, though, you're also a big NWA fan?
Yeah, I am. It's nice now with the network to revisit a lot of it, because, you know, I liked a handful of things. Growing up, you know, like, my video store had the Starcade and, you know, like, a few, you know, random big events, and not a lot of, like, greatest hits type things, and I only saw it on TV a couple times because I was so young, but as I got older and, you know, watched it online and watched on the network and, you know, revisited a lot of the events, I definitely gained a huge appreciation. Like, growing up, I don't even think I'd put Ric Flair in my top 10, but, you know, by the time I was in my 20s and I started watching older stuff, he, like, slowly moved into my top 2 or 3 of all time.
You know, and that's the thing with some of these wrestlers, like, back then or at the time, you don't give them a second of your time, but you give them a chance watching a few of their interviews, and you're like, wow, like, this guy's great. I've been missing out.
Yeah. I mean, it also wasn't targeted at kids, and that's when I was watching. NWA was, you know, I mean, from, the main thing is NWA wasn't really big in Los Angeles. You know, like, when, in my video store, I'd say 90% of it was WWF stuff. And then you'd have, like, a couple NWA things that were, like, in rotation, and then you would have, like, the 1990-1991 big WCW events. And that's mainly how I watched when I was a kid, is I would just keep getting the same VHS, like, every 2 months and rewatching.
Like, when I was growing up, you know, I wasn't much of a Ric Flair fan, but you watch some of his interviews, and it's like, my God, this man has charisma. Like, you couldn't help but become a fan of the guy eventually.
Yeah, when I was a kid, for whatever reason, I loved the Midnight Express. I loved Jim Cornette. I loved the World Warriors. Like, all the tag teams in the NWA, that was, like, my favorite thing. It wasn't necessarily, like, the Flair stuff or, like, the Four Horsemen stuff. That came way later in life for me.
When you think about the 1980s, man, like, how great was that tag team division in both companies?
Yeah, it's crazy. Both companies, it really is nuts to look at it then, and then look at it now, and then just noticing all the differences with the current product. It seems like there's very basic formulas that they could easily go back to, but they just decide not to do that. Like, every heel tag team just had, like, a shithead manager, and they wore matching things, and they did cool moves together, and now it's like, it's just kind of messy. Sometimes it just boggles my mind when you see all the complaints, and clearly everyone is feeling the same way about the product, that they can't just revisit the past and see what works.
And that's the thing, too. Even the tag teams that weren't doing so well, I mean, they still had character, they still had a following, so that's saying a lot right there.
Yeah, I mean, even back then, if you think about it, like, the Bushwhackers were jobbers. They're probably pushing the most product of any tag team at the time.
I'll tell everybody this until however long it will be, but I always put over the Young Stallions. You know, they didn't last long, but to me, they left a lasting impression.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I feel about Power and Glory. Like, that was, like, my favorite for that period, you know? And then kind of culminated at WrestleMania 7, where it's a squash. It just didn't make sense. You know what I'm talking about?
Man, who was I talking with this? We were talking about WrestleMania 7. He's like, they did it wrong. They should have done this. And what he did is switch. Demolition would have fought Legion of Doom, and Power and Glory would have fought a babyface tag team, and you would have had two better matches.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think that the LOD Demolition thing, like, I think they definitely missed the boat on that. I think that would have been the first title belt match that would headline major pay-per-view in the WWF. That sucks, I guess, you know, injuries and people kind of at the end of their career, when people are in the prime of their career, doesn't really work out.
What was it like being there?
I mean, I loved it. I don't remember a ton of it. I do remember a Randy Savage match, like, the most memorable match I'd ever seen. The greatest thing, and, like, even rewatching it, like the most emotional quiz coming out at the end, and, like, everything. It's like everything I like about wrestling. I don't really care that it didn't have the best ending. And, like, hope it's the best thing ever. And just the hysteria about, you know, everything pro-America that was going on. It was very, very memorable.
I really enjoyed WrestleMania 7. You know, I mean, there were a lot of matches on that card, but I don't know, it just seemed like almost everything worked.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, when you're 7 years old, you don't really notice these things. Like, that's the other thing is, I went to WrestleMania 9, and all I see is whenever someone posts something about WrestleMania 9 is, oh, that what a terrible event, blah blah blah, this is the worst WrestleMania. But dude, if you're a kid and you're in Vegas, in the prime of Vegas turning into like a kid's playground, and you get to go to like the toga party thing, and like we're not like Hulk Hogan at the end, you're enjoying yourself. It was a product at the time that was targeted towards kids. It wasn't targeted towards like people who are wrestling experts. It was just a product for kids. That's why you had Johnny Gonzalez and you had the original incarnation of The Undertaker and all these comic book-esque characters that just made it cool. So I actually enjoyed it when I was there. Rewatching it's kind of painful, but you know, when you're there, it's fine. I had a good time.
It's funny you bring up WrestleMania 9. I was there too.
Oh, nice. What do you think?
You know, looking back on it, I mean, yeah, it wasn't the best WrestleMania. They had a lot of bad finishes, and they lost a lot of their big stars by then. But like you're saying, you know, I was 10 years old at the time, and to me, it was like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah. It's a lot. It doesn't, put it this way, it doesn't age well, but at the time, it was pretty great.
What's really nice about the network, too, is they finally uploaded Tito Santana versus Papa Shango, and I haven't seen that match since I watched it live there at Caesar's Palace. It's in the hidden gem section, so it was pretty cool to go back and watch it. I was like, wow, like, I remember watching it, but only bits and pieces, so it was pretty cool to relive the match.
That was kind of towards the end of my wrestling watching for that period. I watched WrestleMania 10. I remember I watched it at my grandparents' house, and there was a pretty bad aftershock from the earthquake. So I actually missed a big, I'd say like two or three big spurts of the event originally, but I did see the Bret Hart match, I saw the Razor Shawn match, and then I saw the main event and had to rewatch it. And then at that point, I remember it was kind of like, I don't know, the early part of the summer of 94, I just stopped caring about wrestling altogether. And just did not watch, like, even to the point where I had to rewatch the 1994 early Hogan run with WCW. I never watched it. I was just never really into it. I didn't get back into wrestling fully, as I mentioned earlier, until, you know, WrestleMania 12. I went to Bash at the Beach 95, but I wasn't really paying attention to WCW or WWF stuff.
The network is one of the best things WWE has ever come up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I go on these, like, funny runs on the network. Like, recently I just did the kind of what I was just talking about, where I watched, I think it was the end of 1993, like, Starrcade 93, until Bash of Beach 96. I watched every single pay-per-view to see all that happened, because I just never really watched it. Like, I've seen all the Starrcades, but, like, I'd never watched the in-between pay-per-views. So it was nice to, like, catch up and kind of see how it all plays out. You know, it didn't change much, because there's, like, a defined line in terms of, like, where it really starts to get good when Scott Hall shows up, but... You know, I'm happy I saw it. I can always hold the conversation up.
How'd you feel about Hogan going to WCW?
I just didn't care at the time. Like, I didn't watch wrestling. Like, I was... In 1994, I was really into playing, like, my own sports. And I was, you know, playing basketball, soccer, and basketball, soccer, baseball all at the same time. And it was a lot. And, you know, I went to school and I had friends, and, you know, maybe those friends weren't really into wrestling, and I was really into watching basketball and other sports at the time. And I got very bored with wrestling, period. Like, I didn't really even know about it. Like, the only thing I would really pay attention to was the fact that, like, Hogan was on ESPN because Shaq's involved.
Shaq was a big part of it because of everything that was happening in Orlando, and I loved Shaq at the time. So I could, like, kind of keep up with that whole part of it. And then the other part of it is, like, I love Baywatch because I was getting to that age, and, like, Flair and Vader aren't Baywatch. So kind of into that. But other than that, literally zero interest in wrestling until I watched I was at WrestleMania 12 and just saw all that go down.
What was it about WrestleMania 12 that renewed your passion for wrestling?
I just hadn't been to a live show in a while, and I was in a different mindset. I was 12 years old. You know, when you're a kid, you're watching it from a different perspective. When you're 12, you're kind of like a smartass, and you kind of get things. Not, like, really get things, but you just look at it from a different lens. And being there and, you know, seeing that whole event, a lot of it I felt was kind of boring, but, like, the highlights of it, I definitely loved. Like, I remember being very, very bored during the Piper Goldust thing, because, like, if you're there in person, you're just, like, watching a screen. And it's very weird and, like, didn't make a lot of sense. It wasn't, like, they had modern technology with, like, great screens. It was the Arrowhead Pond in 1996. So, between that and, you know, how long the Shawn Michaels Bret Hart match was, it's kind of hard to pay attention when you're sitting there as a kid, and I wasn't particularly close. You know, I was probably, like, 30 rows up. So, you know, that kind of, you know, while it was boring, it was still, like, fun to be there and to be with my dad and to just experience that, and then to the outcome and kind of see, like, a changing of the guard, because, you know, I appreciate Bret Hart, and, you know, I can say Bret Hart's probably in, like, time, but as a kid, I didn't find the whole thing to be very fun, to the point where you want to watch this product. So Shawn Michaels gets the belt, and maybe the company's going in a new direction, or just whatever I'm watching, like, something new will happen. But again, interest and made me going on in wrestling, it didn't make me a full-on fan. I didn't become a full-on fan until The Impossible happened at Bastards 96. And I just by chance happened to be one. That was it. It was just like no turning back once that happened.
Did you have a good view of Shawn Michaels coming down the zip line?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it was, I was literally like under the rope. Like, it's like I was on a line where I could just like watch it go all the way into the ring. And that was really cool. Like, the entrances and all that was really fun. I just remember at 20 minutes in, just, like, looking at my dad, like, hey, this is crazy kind of thing, you know? It's different when you watch as an adult than when you watch as a 12-year-old, put it that way.
Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels in that Iron Man match, that's probably my favorite match of all time, so I'm kind of jealous that you saw that in person.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's a great match to rewatch now. Being there, it's kind of difficult for young kids, you know? But it's incredible to rewatch it. But, you know, putting yourself as a 12-year-old sitting in an arena, just like, come on, Dad. That kind of situation, it's a little different.
So going back to Bash at the Beach 1996, what was your reaction to Hogan going back to being a heel?
I was shocked. First of all, back to being a heel, I didn't know he was ever a heel. Did not know. Like, when I was growing up, he was, you know, he was the good guy. So again, like what I said, I never watched the in-between pay-per-views in 1994 and 95. So I didn't know what was going to happen. I watched, what was it, Great American Bash, it was right before it. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And I don't even remember Hogan being there. I remember mention of Hulk Hogan. So I, at that point, I was like, I was a little confused. I didn't even know that Hulk Hogan was like still wrestling, because I was way out of the loop. And then he just shows up, and it's like, oh my God, look, he's saving Savage. It was like my first reaction was pretty much the first experience I've ever had of nostalgia, where it's like, oh my God, like, the thing that I loved as a kid, the mega powers, like, the back, and he's, like, running down, like, this is crazy, and then just, like, no, this is not a fairy tale, this is real life, and it's like, whoa, that's kind of where I feel like I started becoming an adult, when that happened. That was real life.
I wouldn't be a fan of professional wrestling right now if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan. He was my role model growing up, so when he went back to being a bad guy, I was horrified.
I was such a shithead that I was rooting for bad guys. Like, I was already watching this film. I was watching all these movies. I was, like, a fan of Tupac. I was a fan of all the bad guys at that point. So when that happened, it was like, oh, yes. This is, like, wrestling just kind of tapped into what's really going on and things I like in my real life.
On the bright side, it was cool seeing Hulk Hogan pose with Diesel and Razor Ramon.
When The Rock, I just despised The Rock growing up, and even now I kind of joke about it. Like, I don't, when I post a Rock item, I have to call him Dwayne Johnson. To when he first did this guy kind of thing. The time I, for whatever reason, loved, then he just turns on Ahmed Johnson. Then he basically ruins the Nation of Domination, and that thing, that was like the coolest thing outside of the NWO to me, because that was like, I mean, at the time I was really into rap, and to see these guys come out and act like Public Enemy, it was like, whoa, 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 this is cool shit. So to see that happen and him ruin that, and then just going full-blown Steve Austin hysteria that I went into, and The Rock being on the wrong end of that, it really, like, I got to the point where I bought in so much I just didn't like the person, which is silly, but it is what it is.
We lived through the Monday Night War and the Attitude Era. To me, that's like the greatest period in the history of professional wrestling, and kids today they'll never know how awesome it was.
Yeah, I think there's two parts of it. I think it was the best for episodic TV. I don't think it was the best time in wrestling. I think the pay-per-views of the 80s and 1990 are better than any of the Attitude Era pay-per-views and all of the, you know, Nitro Era WCW pay-per-views. I think there's too much emotion. The writing was too good. The skits were too good. All the promos were too good. Everything was pretty polished at that point. And then when you get to Attitude Era, it's all about shock value and, like, crazy things happening on television. When you get to the pay-per-views, these matches, there's very few incredible matches in that era. And the pay-per-views themselves are very, very top-heavy. Very top-heavy. There's usually two or three great matches per card, and then the bottom card was either just like boring matches, or if they were like a great match, like a, you know, incredible wrestlers in the ring, there's too much of a distraction going on outside, and the entire night all you're focusing on is what's going to happen to Stone Cold. The focus when I was watching these interviews in the Attitude Era was never like, oh my God, I cannot wait for the Valentina Steve O'Brown match. That was never the case. It was always what could happen with Stone Cold. Was it different for you?
You know, it's funny you asked me that, because at the time, I was a Stone Cold fan, but looking at it now, I was more of a Rock fan. I didn't really appreciate The Rock until later on, looking back on it, and like, man, this guy was just too good.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing is, when I was a kid, I didn't really pay attention to what, like, a heel and a face was. I thought they were annoying, you know? Like, I just considered them annoying. Like, a Jeff Jarrett is annoying.
or, you know, The Rock, I consider to be annoying. But then looking back on it, it's like, that's what they're paid to do. They're paid to enhance the faces and make them more loved, and you're supposed to hate them more. So in that sense, The Rock did his job probably second best to Stone Cold in that era. The most hateable character of all time.
If somebody like a Jeff Jarrett says or does something and it gets an emotional reaction out of you, he did his job?
Yeah, I despise Jeff Jarrett, but looking back on it, like that was his job.
Man, Jeff Jarrett was great, man. I hated him so much back then. Looking back at now, he really doesn't get enough credit.
Yeah, I kind of just, when I was a kid, I just despised him. I was just like, please get him off the TV. Just get him off the TV. And as you get older, you start to realize that's what he was supposed to. So he did just go on amazing. I thought.
So let's get into what you do for a living, I guess, in your off time. How'd this wrestling for sale thing come to be?
Actually, I'd say like 2013, 14, 15, I was in a really funny group chat with a couple of older guys who I went to high school with, who were like, you know, they're into wrestling. They kind of like looked after me while I was in high school and made sure I didn't get like beat up. But, you know, the thing we always had in common is that we like wrestling. And so we all ran into each other one weekend, and we started a group chat. And, like, the first thing I throw in the group chat was a funny thing that I found on eBay. And, like, that's how, you know, like, you're in a group chat, and, like, some of them survive because of this, like, common theme that you keep doing. Like, we just kept throwing out really funny things we were finding on eBay. Because at the time, I was buying, but I wasn't, like, buying like I do now, and I'm like a degenerate. But at the time, you know, I'd find like a really funny foam hand, or I'd find like a really funny shirt that was like super obscure, and I would send it to them. And then by the time it was the end of 2015, I'm like, guys, we do this like every week where we send each other these fun things. Why don't we just start an Instagram account? And we'll just showcase everything that's like really funny or crazy that was sold that's like merch related, because there's just insane merch out there. I mean, think about like an atomic bomb shaped football, you know, or anything that was released that's just like so crazy. Like, that's what I was focusing on. And when I started the page, I was highlighting those funny things. Like, I remember I posted one feather that was for sale from Ric Flair's robe from Starrcade 83 against Harley Race. And it was just like, it's so off the wall that someone's trying to charge $50 for one feather from a robe that probably had 10,000 feathers in it. So I asked them if they wanted to do it, and I basically just got ghosted. Like, they had zero interest, they didn't want to do it. So I kind of hesitated, and I'm like, maybe it is a dumb idea. So, you know, I thought it was kind of silly at first, but then I kept the name and thought about it. I'm like, you know what, I should just post all these funny things I'm finding. And then like 2 weeks in, people were getting confused, and they started messaging me, and they're like, hey, can I buy this off you? And I'm like, it's actually not mine, I'm just posting things I find off eBay that are funny. And then I started saying, I have some of these silly things like laying around the house. Like, I have some funny Hogan stuff, and I have some, like, I have all my NWO shirts on, I have, like, random things. So I might as well just sell, like, one or two of my items while I'm posting these things and just generate the money. And then it's got to the point where, you know, people were messaging me and they're like, hey, I noticed you're posting these things for sale. Do you buy collections? I'm going through a divorce. My kid is about to go to school. Blah, blah, blah. Like, literally everything you've ever heard. I'm moving. And, you know, I had a decent income at the time, and I'm like, you know what, whatever. I'll buy like $300 worth of things off some guy and just sell them off piece by piece, and just continue to do that and continue to lure selling. And, you know, anything crazy I saw online that was like super undervalued, I would try to get my hands on it. And yeah, basically modeled the business after, you know, I'm very close with, who are in the gold and coin business, and just basically those collections. And Song Character is just really understanding the market, man. And so, you know, by 2000, I'd say the end of 2006, the website, and that's it.
I was a big wrestling fan growing up, but for whatever reason, I never got into, like, the merchandise or buying any shirts or anything like that. But for some reason, I was watching an episode of Monday Night Raw, and Chris Jericho came out, and he had the King of the World shirt. Mm-hmm. And it was such a dope shirt. I'm just like, I have to have that shirt. So I tried calling the WWE shop, because I used to get the catalogs in the mail. Uh-huh. They didn't have that shirt, so I gave it some thought, and I brainstormed, and the light bulb went off in my head. I called the merchandise store at WWF New York, and I ordered the shirt through them, and thankfully I got it, because not too long after they sent me the shirt, that's when they went out of business.
Oh, wow.
That's the first wrestling shirt I remember getting, so it has a very special meaning to me. And after that, I just started buying more and more shirts. Like, I've got so many wrestling shirts now, I'm running out of room in my closet and my drawers. Like, it's just all wrestling shirts.
Yeah, I got to the point where I sold off I'd say half of the shirts I had growing up. Or, you know, stuff I had in my teens and in college, just to, like, keep wrestling for sale going. And as I went, you know, like, I had the blue Savage Madness shirt growing up, but I was a large, and then I got fatter, and so I needed an XL. But I sold the large because it didn't fit me anymore. And then this year, I think I got the XL. So, yeah. It's a bummer that I don't really have the super nostalgic shirt that I used to wear, but I've replaced them with some pretty crazy stuff. That way.
You know, and that's another reason why I just appreciate the account, because, you know, you just post random vintage stuff, and I look at all these shirts, and it's like a trip down memory lane, you know, it's like a museum.
Yeah, and that's the other thing is, you'll see when I post personal items, like when I say personal collection, not for sale, you'll see like 10 people bitch and complain that I posted it. But a big reason why I'm posting these things is I don't think a lot of people understand that these things exist. Like, there's people who comment on my page all the time, or they DM me and they're like, hey man, have you ever seen a Red Rooster shirt? And had I not gotten it, and had I not posted it, do you think a lot of those people would have even known that it existed? I don't know if they're refreshing their memory with the 1990 catalog. I think they just don't know. Dude, I'm coming across things that, when I think I've seen everything, another thing will happen, and I'm just blown away. I am, on the verge of retirement, the only shirt that I'm trying to get is the Hercules 1989 shirt. But I'll come across things like the Superstar Billy Graham shirt. I didn't know it existed. I did not know that they were in circulation. I didn't think I would ever see one. And I have to get it, because it's when you see something that you probably won't ever see again, my advice is always just buy it. It's going to be worth way more later on.
Like I told you in the DMs, that Kurt Angle shirt and Kurt We Trust, I saw that 18 years ago in a random store, and I thought, you know, I didn't think of it at the time, like, oh, okay, I'll just get it later or whatever. It was like $20. I didn't think much of it, but I literally have not seen that shirt until you made that post. I'm like, all right, I'm going to buy this now.
I wanted to keep that. It's just a little big on me, and I just don't, I'm very selective on what I keep at this point, because the Iron Sheik interview is my favorite thing ever. It's the best piece of art that's on YouTube. And that's the shirt he's wearing. So to me, it's like, yeah, it's a Kurt Angle shirt, but it's pretty much an Iron Sheik shirt at this point. Just like that Steve Austin shirt that CM Punk wears in the pipe bomb, that's pretty much a CM Punk shirt at this point.
But you make these posts to educate fans. Like, I didn't know that Marty Jannetty and Rick Martel had their own shirts. That blew my mind.
Right. When I first saw... I got the Rick Martel shirt from a guy in Germany. And he had, like, 5 or 6 of them. And I bought one. It was dry rot. So it was like, just ripped. And then my friend WWF Plug, shout out to WWF Plug for finding me one. And I bought his that did not rip, and it was perfectly broken in and amazing. Another reason why I like perfectly worn shirts as opposed to mint shirts, you know that they've already gone through the washer. You know that they've already been shrunk to their smallest point. You don't need to worry about it changing in any way. The people who want the dead stock stuff, the people who want, you know, the mint things, they don't quite understand that once you put it in the wash, in 2 years from now, when it is, that's the condition that you really want a shirt to be in. A mint shirt just looks stiff and sterile. A vintage shirt is supposed to be soft and nice to wear.
Now, what's your most prized possession?
I mean, the Royal Rumble 88 sweatshirt I posted was... I think I just won. And I just got that. I just got it, like, 2 weeks ago. That's the best thing I've ever seen. I've never seen a better wrestling item. I don't even like the event too much. It's fine. But, like, it looks so regal. And it's the first Royal Rumble, and I'm a big Royal Rumble fan. Like, I like every Royal Rumble, every WrestleMania of that year. It's just the most fun event. And the most telling part about it is you don't need to, and you can make it fun. It's just a fun thing. So, any merch from that, so finding it was a miracle. And, yeah, I my number one at this point, but then I have, you know, a handful of, like, 80s WA shirts that are pretty absurd. I'm through a pile right now. Yeah. It's really in the order that I'm trying to get them. So, about towards the end of 2018, I cut myself off in 9 shirts. And I, a list of those 9 shirts, and I slowly tracked every single one of them down, and the most recent one that I got was the Ravishing Recruit shirt. So at the moment, that's the most difficult thing for me to get, but I still need the 89 Hercules, which I don't have, so that is the hardest one to get technically.
That's the last one on the bucket list, huh?
That's it. I've gotten everything from that list. It's very hard for me to track that down. And I'm like, it's frustrating because I've friends. Do you follow Vintage Wrestling Tees?
Yeah.
My friend Adam in New York. He has 2 of the Hercules and just teases me with it every day. And it's, so now it's escalated my need to find this thing that I haven't seen. Have you had bigger accounts like, Zack Ryder and Kurt Hawkins posted and talked about that I needed the Hercules XL and got no responses? Like, this is a very rare shirt for whatever reason.
When did professional wrestlers start paying attention to your account? Because that's a pretty big deal.
I think when I had like 2,000 or so followers, I was lucky enough to get in touch with Peter Rosenberg and Cash Asono and a couple others, but mainly Peter. Like, Peter, for whatever reason, was like pretty open to like meeting up and coming to my apartment at the time. And, like, seeing what I had. And literally the first time ever meeting him, I went to the hotel he was staying at in when he was in LA covering something. I don't know. I was probably for like ESPN or something like that. And I brought him like a pile of stuff that I had that was in his size. And he bought a few things. We were like hanging out. It wasn't like a handoff, drop off kind of thing. For whatever reason, he was like, "Hey, just like stay. You want to watch the pay per view?" So my wife and I literally just sat with him and like ate buffalo wings and hung out for like 3 hours. And from there, he was just like always so nice about, you know, talking about me on the podcast and, you know, sending wrestlers my way. And, you know, when the way things work on Instagram is when there's like activity from someone who's connected to other people, the wrestlers, then they start to get noticed because of how it shows up in their feed. So, you know, because of him, because of like Cap Shisano, because of some other like musician types, and then wrestlers following those musicians or celebrities, like it just kind of gradually happened. And I've been very fortunate because, you know, I think that the Curt Hawkins, Zack Ryder tag team, since we've become friends, I mean, their careers have only gone up. So clearly had a big impact on the whole thing, especially with Curt. How about that?
Yeah, Zack Ryder's pretty awesome. I met him 10 years ago. He was really nice to me, and I made sure to never forget that. And he actually follows my account, so appreciate Zack Ryder. Shout out.
Brian and Matt, very nice guys. They are salt of the earth. You know, they're very approachable, very nice, and they don't forget where they came from as fans. They appreciate the fans more than anyone. And if there was ever two wrestlers that I could have as like ambassadors of the account, or people who, you know, who have continued to support the account and like get the word out, in many ways I would rather be them than any of the biggest names on the roster, like a Roman Reigns or AJ Styles, just because these guys, they genuinely love wrestling merch. Like, as much as I do, and it's very cool to see guys who I have so much in common with really succeeding now, and, like, really becoming a big part of the show.
Who's your first customer that was a wrestler?
I think Brian Myers, Kurt Hawkins, I think.
So yeah, my advice to wrestling fans out there, if you see a shirt on sale and you really want it, just buy it, because if you don't, you're going to regret it and it's going to be a pain in the ass for you to try to get it later.
Anything with this kind of a market, this is really understand. I try to explain how X, Y, and Z, all 2003, it says WWE anytime they want. WWF on it is scarce. It'll continue to go up. They're no longer allowed to use those letters. Okay? Especially right now when collectibles are going through the roof. They're going to go down. So when you buy it, it's like buying land on a very small scale. Down. There's people who have, very few people who really get it, but it's okay to overpay for certain things. Like when I post items, okay, people think that it's a big number. I know the market. I know that things will sell because there's someone out there that wants it. If it doesn't sell and you leave it at that price, a year from now, it will sell. It'll always get to that point when things are going up and up and up. And because they only made so many of these things and cannot reproduce them, the authentic, real things from that era will continue to go up and up and up. Guarantee that.
What was the most expensive shirt you had to buy?
Oh my god. I hope my wife isn't listening. Let me go through the pile. Oh
not that expensive. I mean, a few of these are like $300, but nothing was really fucked up. I got pretty lucky. I don't think I paid more than like $300 for a lot of these things. I got very lucky with, you know, getting things at the right time or like working out deals. Like for instance, there's there's a guy in LA who I had been in touch with for like a year and a half, and he knew I really wanted the Elizabeth shirt, and he had two. And he wasn't trying to fuck with me and say like, oh, I'm not going to do it, and like tease me the way some of these comebacks have done. It was just like the right time. He was waiting for something that was like acceptable for his end to make it make sense for him. And he saw two shirts that he really wanted, and we made the deal happen. And no money was exchanged. I just gave him two shirts he really wanted. I fortunately got one of them back. The other one I never got back. But deals like that is what I like doing. You know, I paid... Oh, I'll tell you what. The most expensive shirt I bought was, I think, over $400. And it was the... what's it called? The Wrestle War Sting Squadron versus Dangerous Alliance. That was the most expensive shirt I bought. T-shirt. I really love that event growing up, and like, I love Paul Heyman. I love WCW Paul Heyman. I really needed to own. And the people on the shirt, it's really like a who's who, especially of people who don't really have merch. So like, you get your Bobby Eaton shirt, you get your Arn Anderson shirt, you get your Paul Heyman shirt, you get Rick Rude shirt, you get the stunning Steve Austin shirt, you get Larry Zbysko. These are people who don't normally appear on merch. So getting that and having them all on shirt is like a very, very remarkable item to get.
Now, remember when I hit you up to see if you had that Drew McIntyre shirt, the Chosen One from back in the day?
Yeah.
So I had a really hard time finding that shirt. I guess they didn't make too many of them. So after months and months of searching on eBay, I finally found a guy who was selling it. And I think he only sold it to me for like $20. I probably could have gotten it, you know, people probably could charge it for $40 or $50 just because it's difficult to find.
Hey, that's a cool item because he's transformed so much since when that shirt was out. You know, he's a completely different person altogether. He's, you know, in the main event picture, and that's from when he was, you know, just not great. So items like that are very cool, and I'm not knocking them. It's just I didn't really watch the product at the time, and, you know, I don't really have my eye out for that kind of thing. But, I mean, if that is what you like, that's incredible. I'm glad you got it.
Yeah, the only problem was the one he had was a 2X. So it was too big for me, but it was literally the only shirt I could find. So I bought it, right?
Why don't you get it tailored?
Well, here's the thing. This is where it gets better. So I bought the shirt, right? And then not too long after that, somebody else was selling the same exact shirt, coincidentally, and this one was an XL. So I bought that one. So I had two of the same shirts, and I was pretty stoked. I'm like, yes, I finally got one. It's XL. It fits me. It's in good condition. But I thought to myself, like, okay, well, I have this other Drew McIntyre shirt that's too big for me. What am I going to do, right? So I had a crazy idea. So what happened was, long story short, I actually ended up going to WrestleMania 35, and we were supposed to meet up there, you and I, but I couldn't make it because I had to abide by the WWE schedule, because I was staying over at their hotel. So lo and behold, I run into Drew McIntyre, and I was like, hey, Drew McIntyre, I got your shirt. And he was all stoked. He's like, wow, I haven't seen that shirt in forever. When they gave me the shirt, it didn't fit me. Just the fact that he was telling me that he had a difficult time getting his own shirt, right?
Wow.
So I actually gave him that shirt, and he was seriously thinking about wearing it at WrestleMania 35.
I mean, that's a really cool story. I hope he actually does that.
So when it's all said and done, as of this very moment, what's your favorite wrestling match of all time?
Mr. Perfect, Bret Hart, SummerSlam 91.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty solid. Very emotional match, too.
Oh, my God. That was, like, my prime of watching. And, you know, when you're a kid and you don't like the heels, but you, like, enjoy matches that they're in? Like, for me, it was always Rick Martel, Jake when he was a bad guy, Mr. Perfect. The Mr. Perfect matches, like, some of these things are mind-boggling. This thing that they did at SummerSlam 91, like, I always say should be the first match anyone should ever watch if they want to become a wrestler. That's, like, everything great about wrestling in one match.
Well, hey, you never know. You got quite the following. You got quite the collection. Maybe we'll see you on a WWE documentary sometime on the network.
I would hope so at this point. I'm really trying to be a Hall of Famer.
So what's the end goal right now?
The end goal... I don't know if I have an end goal, but the next goal is I'm really going to be to... just get the website up and running with the new platform that I want to do. And I do have some other ideas related to it, like mini shows and different documentaries that I'm looking to do. But yeah, really just have my little piece of the pie of the wrestling business, which is, you know, very minute compared to some of the big boys out there. But, you know, it's so shocking. I've made, like, really good friends. Like, friends that I talk to every day. Friends that I not just interact with on Instagram, but I talk to on the phone. We hang out on weekends. It's just so crazy that I had a stupid idea, did it, and then your life is transformed. Even if it's not making, like, the most money in the world, it's just the people you meet, the experiences you get to do. I don't know if I would have gone to WrestleMania 35 if I didn't have this business, if I didn't do a pop-up in New York. So, it's really cool. In that regard, I'm very fortunate. I guess the end of it, I don't know. I would hope that I, at the very least, could maybe force WWE's hand and even AEW's hand and maybe make better merch, I guess. I would love to consult and just give my two cents on a lot of these things, because some of these things they're just, like, not even trying. And I would hope that me, you know, bringing some of these back to light and exposing some people to these items, I'd hope that they would have a little bit of an impact on the creative people who are making these items. That's what I would hope.
How many shirts do you have right now?
For sale or in my collection?
Both.
Collection, over 100 shirts. And then I have sweatshirts, jackets, hats, yada yada. Shirts, you know, I was very fortunate to sell about 2/3 of my entire inventory for WrestleMania weekend. And then from there, I haven't done any huge buys until last week. There was a guy, I can't really mention him by name, but he had a huge wrestling radio show in Baltimore, all throughout the 90s, and interviewed countless WCW, ECW, WWF talent, and he would always get free merch. And I just recently bought out his entire collection, so I have a few hundred shirts and hats on the way. So at that point, I probably have 500 articles of clothing that I have, which I'm somehow in love. It just stressed me out to no end, but okay.
Now, where can fans follow you on social media?
At wrestling the number 4 sale on Twitter and on Instagram. Basically, all I have, and I have the website, wrestling4sale.com, which should be up and running relatively soon, with or without the new platform, but I will start posting some items on it very soon. That's for sure. Even if it's not the way I want it.
All right. Well, I appreciate you doing this interview with me today, and I also want to thank you for doing business with me. You know, I love the WCW Hog Wild jacket. So.
Oh, yeah. Dude, you got a gem there. Good for you. Did you wear it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Good.
All right, so we'll keep in touch and keep doing your thing.
Thank you. I really appreciate having me on the show.
All right, yep. Talk soon. Bye.
Well, I met this lady and I told her quite a story. Said I love her forevermore. But the trouble is, I tell the same old story to every girl that walks through the door. This is the slickster talking at your honey. They don't, sometimes they do it and sometimes they won't. So I said to this girl, hey, you get out. And she got to her feet and began to shout, you a jive so bro, a jive so bro. And you're always lying to your friends. You a jive so bro, a jive so bro. And you never get nothing in the end. What you talking about, ladies? This is the slickster talking to you. I don't do nothing but tell the truth.
You never get nothing in the end.